各位观众，大家好，这是美国之音时事大家谈，我是陈小平。在中共20大将于2022年的下半年在北京召开之前，英国中国问题研究专家、伦敦国防学院刘氏中国研究院院长兼中国研究教授克里布朗，最近出版了一本专门研究习近平的专著，在书中。布朗指出，习近平彻底拒绝西方模式，专注于维护可持续的一党专政。他清除了前任领导人留下的模棱两可，去除了外界关于中共真实运作和意图的所有幻觉。布朗强调呢，无法满足中产阶级的期待将是习近平面临的最大问题，而党内的所谓反对派。军队、民营企业和少数民族问题呢，都不太可能撼动他的支配性的地位。美国之音记者薛小三为此专门采访了布朗教授，请他就习近平目前面临的最大威胁和失败的致命后果是什么，谁又会是习近平的潜在接班人等热点问题发表看法。下面请观众收看访问的内容。
Yeah, I think Xi Jinping is a conviction politician. So I think he has beliefs, although those beliefs are probably ones that the rest of the world, particularly America and Europe, find hard to accept. I think he's a believer in a strong national sort of politics, nationalistic politics, which is, of course, a particular issue for the outside world as it comes across as very assertive. I think he's probably a conservative politician with a small c. He's not someone who wants great kind of transformations in terms of what the party believes and how it approaches policy. So he's not like Deng Xiaoping in a way, who created a kind of different approach to the whole politics and the policy making of the Communist Party. And I think finally, Xi Jinping is probably an elitist politician. He's from a kind of political elite family. Xi Jong-sun, his father, was a previous vice premier and a significant leader in the Maoist period and then the Deng period. And I think that gives him a sense probably of entitlement, of this idea, as one as he, of his former classmates said a few years ago when interviewed, that it's for this generation of elite leaders from, you know, kind of elite families in the past to really guide the party and have ownership over the party. So I think he is, you know, kind of probably described as an elitist too. Well, I think he's a leader who is appropriate for a time when China seems to be about to achieve geopolitical status. It might well become the world's biggest economy in terms of its size sometime in the next few years. It's a country that is, for the first time in modern history, really been, you know, kind of sort of central to the whole geopolitical order. And it's a country that has enough influence now to change that order, willingly or unwillingly, just because of the size of its economy and its impact. And so I think Xi Jinping's confident, fairly assertive, pretty strong communication leadership style is suitable for that message. So when I say Xi Jinping's not really a dictator in the sense I think people might mean, it's not because he's running his own network just to look after his own interests. It's because he's in a system where power is very centralized, where the message is a very centralizing one. And that's why he can speak to it in a way which is very confident. And I think his personality probably gives something to that too. So that combination makes him the kind of leader he is. I think the party made a commitment at the beginning of COVID to zero COVID policy. And when it saw the rest of the world, particularly the United States and developed countries in Europe, having high levels of fatality and infection, I think the party saw this as almost a propaganda kind of opportunity that showed that the Chinese system was able to look after people better than Western systems. I think the problem now is it's difficult to reverse out of that. There is a real issue that if China were to relax at the wrong time, there probably would be very high levels of fatality because the Chinese Sinovac vaccine doesn't seem to be as effective against Omicron as other kind of foreign vaccines. And also because of the number of elderly, like in Hong Kong, who haven't been vaccinated, and these are a very vulnerable group. So I think this would not be politically acceptable. Well, a Cultural Revolution from 1966 in China was a very specific and strange moment in Chinese history. And there are parallels, I guess, in the fact that it's almost like some of the kind of groups involved in implementing the lockdowns are kind of almost like Red Guards. I mean, there's footage yesterday of two kind of differently dressed health workers, you know, smashing against each other and fighting. And I mean, it looked like Red Guard groups in the Cultural Revolution for sure. But I mean, I think this is a different China economically. And there are all sorts of other differences about the politics of China today, which I think mean we should be wary of drawing easy parallels with the Cultural Revolution. I mean, the Cultural Revolution led to political failure and the end of Maoism once Mao died in 76. I don't think this leadership who remember the Cultural Revolution, I mean, Xi Jinping was about 16 when it started, maybe a bit younger, maybe 13, but had real experience as an adolescent going to Shanxi in the, you know, Yan'an, the kind of revolutionary base. I think they would be well aware that the Cultural Revolution is not probably a great model to copy. So it looks on the surface like the divisions similar to the Cultural Revolution period. I would be very wary of making this too deep a connection. What we're seeing now is a very complicated fight about, you know, trying to impose a kind of measures against a pandemic that could get out of control, where the government is kind of panicking almost and being very heavy-handed about it. But that doesn't mean that it's going to probably not be able to keep control of this as long as it doesn't, as I say, stretch lockdowns indefinitely and also across the whole of the rest of China. I think the most difficult issue and the greatest threat for Xi and the leadership around him is still economics. I mean, I think that they have been a leadership but not as obsessed and interested in economics maybe as the previous leaderships, Deng Xiaoping's period, for instance, and Jiang Zemin and Hu Jintao. But I mean, for this leadership, like previous ones, if they don't deliver in terms of either stable or improving material living standards, they're in a problem. So I think if lockdowns do have a really serious impact on Chinese growth and bring it well below the projected 5.5%, then that is going to have a big impact on this middle class, who after all, you know, several 100 millions, I think 400 or 500 million, you could say, are now falling in this group. For them to feel that they're losing their savings, they're not making money, they're having worse lives now than they did in the past, would be hugely damaging to this leadership, because this is the group whose aspirations I think the Xi leadership, with common prosperity and other ideas, is trying to really appeal to and get support from. Now, for Xi Jinping, in some ways, the biggest problem for him and his colleagues is people's expectations. I mean, I think people are kind of feeling confident. Well, they were before these lockdowns. They felt feeling confident. They felt like China was going to be number one, that it had a global status, quite nationalistic. But domestically, you know, kind of feeling that the country was still growing. The problem is, of course, that, you know, a middle class don't expect the same things as a rural class. They want good transport, they want clean water, clean air, good places to live, things that are affordable. If this is squeezed, that's when they become discontented. It's not the most desperate that are the problem in history. I think people basically agree that it's the middle who are the problem, because they're the ones that think things could be better. They're not totally, you know, desperate and given up. And this group can get very, very vociferous and angry. And this is the group, I think, his expectations Xi Jinping has spent a lot of time thinking about. And he might not be able to meet those expectations as quickly as people want. That's the biggest problem as he goes into the 20th Party Congress later this year. There are probably people within the party who are uneasy with his style of leadership. There's little evidence of that. I mean, it's not like in the Deng Xiaoping era or the Jiang Zemin era where there were people, for instance, like Cao Shi, Hu Jintao had to have a premier, Wen Jiabao, who was quite critical at the end of, you know, the sort of time in power. So at the moment, Xi Jinping doesn't seem to have that problem. Although, again, there are rumors that Li Keqiang, his premier, might be more powerful now, and Wang Qishang is out of favor, and you know, there's always these potential divisions. It doesn't look, though, as though those are threatening, because Xi Jinping is so dominant. I mean, there's no one with his networks and stature, and you know, who would play if he were to decide to retire in October or November this year, who would be able to step into his seat? I mean, so much investment has gone into building his personal, you know, his personality and everything and his position, that it's hard to think how it could be replaced without a great deal of instability. I think there are always other groups, non-state businesses, that might be very angry at the way they've been treated recently. Didi and Alibaba, for instance, have had some rough treatment. Military is unlikely, because the military have been dealt with by the anti-corruption purges and made very politically loyal. And of course, there are always more minority groups in Xinjiang, Tibet, Inner Mongolia. Again, I think it's unlikely that there are serious issues with those areas, but would they be a threat to his leadership nationally? I think that's unlikely. No, I think the middle class are the big issue. I think that they are the ones that most problems come from, and the political elite are probably the second group, though I think quite difficult to see whether they would really do anything at the moment. If the middle class get unhappy, political elite will then get involved, and that's when the problem comes. But I don't think it will happen the other way around. Well, the policy problem is common prosperity. So dealing with inequality, dealing with equity, ensuring a more balanced economic model. So that has all been true before. It just becomes much more important to deliver that. And delivering on some of these promises to implement deeper reforms and to create a more balanced growth model. I think the second is dual circulation, to make China less dependent on technology and markets in the outside world. So less exporting, that kind of is happening by accident rather than design at the moment. Technology which China is creating. The outside world, of course, is still important to China. Semiconductors is not something China can produce, but it still wants to have that ability, you know, in the next few years. Finally, in terms of its international relations, of course, the issue of Taiwan, which has become more urgent and more important for the Xi leadership. Again, I don't think that there's going to be a military move on Taiwan in the next 5 years, but I think there's certainly going to be a continuous focus on making Taiwan more and more kind of under pressure, so that it looks like, you know, being tied more tightly to more closely to China would be a more attractive thing. There are 24 members of the Politburo. Some of those will need to retire later this year. Some will continue. So there's probably about half of those that you can say this is a group that's likely to have leadership potential in the future. So it's quite a small group. In that, you know, there are figures that have often been mentioned, Hu Chunhua, Wang Yang. You know, these have still, there's the right age and they've got lots of experience. But remember, Xi Jinping does break some of the rules. So age limits don't seem to be that important anymore. This 68 years retirement level, you know, he's going to be 70 next year, Xi Jinping. So if he continues as party secretary, then, you know, obviously that rule no longer really applies. There may be other leaders who are in the Central Committee, and there may even be potential beyond that. But it's hard to look at the lists of people and say, okay, this is, you know, here are two or three that are really obvious. I think the Congress would be important because it probably will give a better idea of, you know, who's in favor or who's been evaluated very well. And you'd think within the next 5 years, they would be groomed a bit more. I mean, you know, just because Xi Jinping can't live forever, right? So say today, I can't see it likely that Xi Jinping is going to move aside much in later this year. I mean, you know, there may be big surprises, but I think the party does not like risk and it doesn't like instability and it doesn't like surprises. So I think if this were possible, it would have already been signaled. So I don't think, I mean, if you ask me who's going to be the premier, if Li Keqiang, which is probably likely retires, I wouldn't really be able to give you a good idea. I mean, the party secretary of Shanghai has been spoken of as, you know, potential material, but then the recent management of Shanghai might have blighted his chances. So it's still very, very unclear. I think Xi Jinping is a politician who has taken a stand. We know what he thinks about the status of his country. We know what he thinks about China's role in the world, because we've got things like the Belt and Road Initiative, which means China wants a bigger role in the world. We know what he thinks about adopting Western ideas into China. He's said no. We know what he believes is the most important domestic priority, and that is to make one party rule sustainable. So we definitely know a lot about his standpoints. It's no, you know, kind of lack of clarity. And I think in the past, there was probably, like, you know, quite a lot of lack of clarity. I mean, Hu Jintao never really spoke much about China's vision of itself in the world. And Xi Jinping certainly has. And I think this is inevitable because China is such a huge country now that people need to know where it stands. But it's also risky because, of course, people then can criticize China where it stands. And I think Xi Jinping, therefore, has been a divisive figure because many think, OK, China needs a strong leader because it's a strong country now. And others think that he's a dictator who's, you know, basically just crushing everyone else. I don't think those extremes capture what he is. I think it's something more complicated in the middle. So that's why I say that there is one ambiguity, which is, you know, what is the party and what is Xi? I mean, has he completely annexed the party, or is the party still, you know, kind of the key thing? I think the party is still the key thing. Xi Jinping is just a, you know, appropriate leader for it. But on everything else, I think you can definitely say Xi Jinping's position is not unclear. We know where he stands. I think the problem will be if his style of rule is damaging to the party's ability to continue and to have a monopoly on power. So if it is, you know, the case that as he becomes, you know, the third term leader, he implements policies which are creating social unrest and he's the problem, well, then I think clearly the party and Xi are going to be clashing. I don't think that this is a conflict like that between Mao Zedong and the Communist Party in the Cultural Revolution, where Mao had the prestige and the ability to basically take the party on and win, which is what he did. With Xi Jinping, I'm not sure. I don't think Xi Jinping would be able to get that kind of support. I mean, the party is much better at looking after its interests now. And there may come a point, I mean, it doesn't look at all likely today, but when, you know, if Xi Jinping's policies are regarded as reckless and just bad for the party and its continuation in power, then he will have opposition and they may well be able to do something with him. We don't see that today, but I think the party is a ruthless entity and it has been ruthless for far longer than Xi Jinping. Well, look, what they want is what they've said they want for a long time, which is for China to be a great, rich, powerful country. And if he is able to achieve that as leader of the party, there's no problem. I mean, if China continues to grow richer, then it will continue to be stronger and that will have achieved the great mission. If, however, there is a significant economic downturn, and that is blamed on his policies, particularly lockdowns and other things, attacking non-state companies, you know, creating uncertainty, then we have a different dynamic. He is the problem, not the solution. The party's vision is to be, you know, the party that leads China to a great, powerful, strong status. And Xi Jinping works within that vision. I mean, that vision existed from the time of Mao. I mean, now it's really, really happening. I mean, China is wealthier than it's ever been before and stronger than it's ever been before. Now, I think Xi Jinping, in his period in power, has helped make the country stronger and richer till today. But if he fails to continue doing that, then what's the point? It's not what the party and the country think they need. Yeah, I mean, it can go from there being a replacement of him as leader by someone else, that's the softer option, although it would be disruptive, to civil war, that's possible. I mean, though that, again, is, I think, less, not likely, but again, it's possible, to the collapse of the CCP's power and China, you know, having a different governance system. That would also be very disruptive, but that could happen. There's no inevitability about the CCP being in power in China. I mean, it's an historic fact, but it can change. I mean, the problem with all of those outcomes is the most predictable is what we have now, where, you know, Xi Jinping manages to kind of have a leadership that manages all these issues and we, you know, get some kind of transition into the future. The least predictable, of course, is complete collapse of regime and whatever lies after that. And that, of course, is not just a problem for China, but a problem for the world, because that unpredictability would be colossal. The world's potentially biggest economy falling apart as a country is no joke. So we have to remember that's a possible alternative to this dictatorial style leadership we get at the moment. It's a perfectly possible.
谢谢克里布朗教授接受美国之音专访。节目中嘉宾发表的观点不代表美国之音。也谢谢我们观众朋友们的收看，我们下次节目再会。